Blog Talk Radio.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Yasagonye, Will Bluewater, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation. OCO, Ginalii, this is Will Blue Otter coming to you from the virtual studios of Blog Talk Radio. I have with me on the line Joe Sitting Owl and Pam Sexton. I have yet to get Dr. Rogers on the line, but we'll get him on the line. OCO, Joe?
Sile, brother, good to hear your voice again.
Hey, and feel free to leave it on speaker so you can both hear and talk. And until I get Chief Rogers on the line, there might be. Oh, and Lee Standing Bear, his mother-in-law passed away, and he won't be able to join us. And,
okay.
So if you don't mind, would you talk a little bit about Cherokee DNA studies that you guys are quite expert at and while I try to get Chief Rogers on the line. Okay, I'll be back. You won't be able to talk to me for a couple of minutes till I come back and you hear me, okay?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, tell the folks about it. I'm leaving the line now.
Okay. Well, we have been honored and had the privilege of working on Cherokee DNA for over 13 years here in southern Middle Tennessee. We knew that someday we would be able to prove one way or the other whether the Cherokee were of the House of Israel or not, or part of the Asian American Indian DNA group. And we were the first to do this and have the largest database in the world of Cherokee DNA. It's been very, very interesting, 13 years worth of research and work. And we have brought it full circle, but we'll still be working on it. But yes, we have proven through the DNA that the Cherokee, American Indians, are of the house of Israel. And we have found in the DNA reports Ashkenazi, Sephardic, the Jew gene, the Kohanim gene, Levite, Benjamin, and the Joseph, the three tribes that has to be found prophetically in the last days. And that was verified by Rabbi Lazer Brody in Israel. Rabbi Lazer Brody was the first person to find the Jew gene in the Iroquois people years ago. And we crossed paths 7 or 8 years ago and started working together on the DNA research. And it's been a great rewarding experience. DNA does not work like what people want it to work like. It's specific in its parameters. For the male side, if you're a male, then you would test a male, and if the dad's dad, one of those was a full-blooded Cherokee, it's going to come out clearly in the report. So on mom's side, if you're a male or a female, it would be mom's mom, going back 22,000 years. If one of those is a full-blooded Cherokee, then it's going to show up in meeting with our database. About a year or so ago, Dr. Donald Panther Yates of DNA Consultants has isolated the Cherokee Pink clan, which is haplogroup U5, and that's been published in Ancient American Magazine by Wayne May, clearly giving the up-to-date results of the 13 years of research that we've done in Cherokee DNA. So it does. It's not a DNA is something that doesn't help everyone. Our most important part of it is finding and isolating and absolutely proving the seven sacred Cherokee clans, these clan mothers that go back. And this will be done within the next 3 years. We certainly hope so. But by having one of them, we only have six more to go. And, of course, Dr. Yates is working on it day and night. We joined together as a team to combine our DNA to have this huge database where we can do the research very easily and have it at our fingertips. So we find very little Asian, American Indian DNA in the Cherokee, and that would be A, B, C, D on the mom's side, mtDNA. But we found out why that showed up in the Cherokee, because we did come from the Holy Land in ancient times in many, many migrations. Well, in the book, Tell Them They Lie, I believe that was, I'm trying to think of the author of that book. There were Western tribal people that were starving to death west of the Mississippi. And they came into the Cherokee to survive, and we took them in. And that's how we got the A, B, C, and D haplogroups in very small quantities over those years. So are you back on, Blue Water? Are you with us?
I am with you, and the author was Traveler Bird.
Traveler Bird,
and,
that's right.
Right, and... Chief Rogers, we're going to have on the line here very, very briefly. And while we're we'll talk some more about DNA later, but a lot of people don't realize that the Cherokee have worshipped the same God as the Hebrews and the Christians. And just to give you some idea, and by the way, we now have Chief Rogers on the line. I just wanted to, before we introduce Chief Rogers, we're going to be talking about Cherokee religion tonight. And we've had a little primer on Cherokee DNA from Chief Joe. But I want to give you an example of how, now, let me preface this by saying that when I was taught about the stomp dance, I was taught that it had a lot to do with our religion. I just want to play you a one-minute clip of one of the stomp dance songs and listen for the permutations of the name of God, Yahweh. And here's Walker Calhoun singing the Trail of Tears tune version of Guide Me, Jehovah.
If you feel like giving them a little bit of Guide Me, Jehovah, which is what is essentially the same words, but to the other tune.
Oh, yeah. The tune they used on the Trail of Tears goes like this. It's the words the same as Hold the God and Change in Hand. I like the tune of this Hold the God and Change in Hand to put these words in the real tune they used on the Trail of Tears goes something like this. Squatty, he says, the Yehovah, Eladika Isari, Jewalika, the Yehaya, Jasendiki, the Yehe, Skisteliski, Skisteliski. Liko hila, liko hila, skistaliske siyoko.
So, Chief Rogers, meet Joe.
Yes,
Sitting
sir.
Al. Meet Joe Sitting Al and Pam Sexton.
Well, I'm very pleased to be among such good company. Thank you, guys.
Oh.
The fascinating thing I find in the song is that they're in all languages, they all change a little bit through time, but the sacred language of the Cherokees was known by who you were within the tribe, and if you were what your job was. In other words, and the same thing goes for other religions, too. A cantor, a singer, which in now in this present time is the equivalent of a priest. But in the older times of the Cherokees, the priest had certain functions and the cantor had certain functions. And the priest had certain functions to lead the people. And the people were allowed in the earliest days direct access to the name of God, Yehovah, and if you follow that name back when you read James Adair, as soon as he got to other tribes who had received the word at a later time, it would change to Yahweh or Yahoh or Hoa. For example, and the chief that's on the line and the sister who's on the line, in modern Cherokee, if you say Ho-wah, that means I'm good with that.
Mm-hmm.
But to the ancient Cherokee, well, actually, to the Cherokees of the 15th, 16th, 1700s, it meant if Lord permits, or if God permits, if God wills it, it was a more serious thing. It wasn't to be used in daily parlance.
Mm-hmm.
Now we do not have the word promise. We don't promise people stuff. If we say it, it is a promise, and that shows that Yehovah is present in the ancient Cherokees. If they said this, yes, chief, I'll meet you at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was implied a promise if I said it, because not only would the chief be there and I would be there, or our sister would be there,
mm-hmm.
but God was there.
It's like Chief Hicks signs off all his letters. Hang on, it is true.
Yeah.
And then one other example, Black Elk, when he was in Neihardt, when he was writing a story about Black Elk,
mm-hmm.
He said that "Hey Ya" was an invocation in the name of God. And years ago, I saw a History Channel show about the names of God. Haven't seen it in
mm-hmm.
years, but it said that
mm-hmm.
even though that there was one name of God that any average Hebrew could use to invoke,
that's right,
and that was Heyah.
Yeah, but he could not say Yehovah,
right?
Unless he was a priest, and unless it was on like Passover or something that was sacred, in which it was part of the service. But I think that what we have now with the inspiration of Sequoia seeking out the R and the M speaking Cherokees that had left in 1720 in Exodus in South Carolina and parts of the northern Georgia, there were a group that had M's and R's in their word, and Adair called them the Cherokee. R-A. And I thought to myself, well, there's another change in our language, apparently. I thought that 13 years ago. And after I dug into what it actually meant and what the word actually meant, Ra meant led by God.
Uh-huh.
And so for a Cherokee to be singing that at a stomp dance, which is a sacred thing, make no doubt. But it's a phrase that's permissible to be used because I can't speak for the Kituwah, I can't speak for them, but I know from what they've told me that their priest uses things which the tribe actually doesn't get to hear unless the members of the tribe come forth and work their way up into the inner circle. And so around that stomp dance, you're going to find there's different stomp dances during the year. Some of them will have everybody present, and some of them will have those inside people who have shown the respect and the discipline of the ancient Cherokees, that if they were to hear something, they were to prize it or show respect for it. And so whenever it's hard for me to get used to people saying, should we do such and such? And the group will answer, Hawa. I'm hearing large yes.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're really saying is, yeah, yes, let's do that. And so when you go back in the Cherokees, they literally had a one-on-one relationship, one-on-one now, with the deity, the Une Klanahi, the provider of all things. And so when the English came and they wanted to parley, a general wanted to parley with the Cherokee nation, thinking it was one thing, he had to go to three or four different areas to address the one nation. Because they would not come over the hill to the others, not out of hostility, but they didn't have that concept down. it was a bigger concept. They were like a nation of spirit. Now they had a red chief and they had a military complex too, don't get me wrong. But when it came to the most important element of foreign treaties and such, the principal chief or the white chief, and in the earliest times from 1760 or earlier, the priest would also be consulted along with the principal chiefs, and what we see is a snapshot of the Cherokees about every 50 years as they were in decline, and it was our fault. Every 50 years or so we were in decline, that the language was changing, it was being scattered about, you know, the morning song, the Wende Yaho, that is completely understandable to us. We know what it says. And we're getting ready to ask Rita Coolidge to do it again and to cut it with the translation on one stanza, and then one translational stanza, then another stanza, another translational stanza, so that we get that back to our people and any person of a good heart that wishes to join us in these thoughts. And in this worship, we're open to anybody. You know, we had the clan, the long hair clan, and it was for just there was a lot of brain drain within the Gulf Basin after the Spaniards came. There were people that were intelligent enough to say, "There's disease in this village. I'm leaving here." And as these people would go inland, they would come to the Chalagi, or Chalangi, if you want to go back to the most ancient of names, and they liked what they saw, and they would join, and they would go to a clan. When there was a
Well, it shows you're still online. I'll call you back.
Me? Hello.
Sorry, Chief. Joe called me on a landline to let him know he'd been cut off, and I didn't mute my mic. Go ahead and continue. I apologize.
Okay. Because there won't be a show without Joe. So anyway, the amount of people that came from other tribes to the Cherokee were quite a quantity in almost all time periods, and whenever there was a conflict in council between the various chiefs as to what Cherokee law was, they would send for one of the elders of the newcomers clan, or the long-haired clan is what it was actually called, and they would come over, the elders would come over and clear it up for the chief's council what was really Cherokee law and what wasn't. So we were very open to outsiders, but we also allowed them to bring in religions of sorts after a while. And in that dissolution of our original.
So, brother.
Is this the chief?
We now have Joe sitting out and Pam with us. Sorry about that.
Okay.
And it's kind of an invisible talking stick here. The usual traditional rules don't count. If you really feel like you need to say something, just clear your throat or something.
Pam, did you hear what I said? Would you like to continue?
No, I didn't hear what you said.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, I'll tell you what is always better the second time because my thoughts are better, more organized.
Oh, well, good.
The history of the Cherokee is an incredible history. And we have so much to live up to, and we were unique. As I'm speaking to a sister, I think we should cover that. For you to divorce your husband, all you had to do was to put his personal effects outside of the house. You own the house, and you own the children, and you own the property that was used for the production of food for the children. And if he was to protest, well, he could protest all he wanted, but if he touched you, then your clan would come and touch him back.
Wow.
before the sun went down that day. And the children always belong. Yes, yes. When they say civilized, they mean it.
Stan Waddy's great-grandson was telling me that he came home one day and some of his stuff was sitting outside the front door, and he thought he was curtains. And he started crying, and his wife came outside with had a broom in her hand and says, "What's up?" He said, "Well, you just divorced me." He said, "No, I'm just cleaning house. I had to get some of the stuff out." They got to be careful about it.
Scare a man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Waddies are not scared easy.
he was an Air Force colonel. He passed away now, but anyway, I stayed with him for a couple of weeks. He's quite a guy.
Yeah, that whole family's quite a family. We had an anthropologist look at great grandmother, and she said she happened to be looking at some of the Stan Waddies photographs and said, "Well, these two people are connected." And so Mary Price who married William Price, they were the grandson of Aaron Price. The reason all those families seem to overlap, and I know that people that are unknowledgeable about the Chalagi, they think that when people write into, say, All Things Cherokee, for example, I've seen some person in the middle of nowhere will write into All Things Cherokee and say, "I heard that my grandmother was a princess, or my great-great-grandmother was a princess," and they used to get just completely scorched by the website for saying such a thing. And they said, "Well, we've always had a vote. We've never had kings or hereditary anything." And of course, you know, when you read the Chronicles of DeSoto, of course he went there and he found an empress that was in charge of the Cherokee Nation at that time.
Kofita Cheki.
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't forget after the British got here, our Uka became a suzerain king to George's predecessor, and was known as the Emperor of the Cherokee for a while. And that's fact.
Oh, that's fact. We had hereditary families for service, Gadugi,
mm-hmm.
and that went for the red families too. You know, just because you were one of the hereditary families. If you had a perchance for weapons and strength and courage, well, they would catch it early, and next thing you know, they're grooming you, and next thing you know, you're dragging canoe, and you're at the front of stuff. Same thing goes with Diwali, with Bowles. But those families that came across the Western, it was very easy to ID them with because they really hadn't lost the religion. When 1720, when the religion pulled out and went back to the South to go back from where we came from, it was the remnants left that were taking care of the old people that could not be in Exodus. And the people who were going to stay and catch up later and things like that. In 1825, with Payne, and I've been through the entire manuscript of Payne, which is really something to wade through. There was less than 12 people in Tahlequah at that time. So when you divide that into the amount of people out there, there was probably a couple of hundred that still spoke the old language. The Catoosa had to go underground during the Civil War. They were not for slavery, and so the pin Indian, where they would wear a small lapel pin or a pin on their cuff, and that way they could identify each other, and they knew what it meant. It meant that they were the Nighthawk Society, and so anyway, they had to go underground, and then when they finally came back out, and Ross Swimmer said, or was it Keeler? Keeler, pardon me, said let's disband in the 1970s. The Kituwa said, well, hey, what about us? We're still Cherokee, and so at that time they started talking more about how they were abiding by the ancient teachings that we had.
That's true. Now, the Kituwa have been recognized since the 40s, late 40s, and as far as the government was concerned, they held the sovereignty of the Cherokee Nation. They were the first, the Kituwa.
Absolutely. Chief, we read the letters of General Arbuckle, and the original Oklahoma group was called the Immigrant Council.
Mm-hmm.
He said the Western Cherokee and the Kituwa are actually the ones who represent these people. And that's when the assassination started,
uh-huh.
when of Kituwa and of
uh-huh.
Western Cherokee
uh-huh.
Started right after the U.S. government said, no, we're going with the ones that traditionally have been in power and just did not come in power because of money
uh-huh.
that some of them had acquired in large amounts in the last 7 or 8 years prior to the Trail of Tears.
Uh-huh. Yeah, George Lowry and two other chiefs set up traditional government in Arkansas on the 1817 reservation, and then when they were moved into Oklahoma, the Trail of Tears bunch came and outnumbered them 2-1, and they usurped the government.
Absolutely. And you know what? That because we're the ones from Texas and Mexico, that is their problem. But it doesn't change the history. It doesn't mean just because they want to write their history in a given manner, it doesn't. Anybody's history doesn't make something right or wrong. The facts of it make it right or wrong. And the poor Kituwa have been through just so much grief. In oppression, through you know they had a lawsuit filed on them last month again with the Department of the Interior trying to recapture them because they're worth a lot of money to the Oklahoma group. I mean, it's still going on.
What a shame.
Now, Chief Pam,
fine people.
Does have some first-hand experience in part of the Cherokee religious ancient beliefs and practices, in that her husband crossed over about a year ago,
mm-hmm.
and he was proven through the DNA haplogroup U5 Cherokee paint clan. And so Chief Pam, being with plenty of children, she's got a house full of children, she had the God-given right in the Torah and in the Cherokee law to select one of her husband's brothers to marry her.
That's correct.
She placed her slippers under his bed and claimed him.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact,
When Anuka died,
the successor was chosen. The first pick was the eldest son of the eldest sister of the deceased Uka. That's the way
mm-hmm.
things. That was dynastic.
Mm-hmm. Unless there was another reason for not.
Right.
They always figured the hand of Yehiwa was available. If one child was not up to it,
mm-hmm.
They had the flexibility to move it around even then because they thought it was a sign from God.
Right, and
yeah.
Part of
but you're right.
I have firsthand knowledge in this, but the brother that she selected was of the Paint Clan, Cherokee Paint Clan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he, of course, would never say no because if he did that,
yep.
he would be shunned, and the high priest
mm-hmm.
would have to go spit on him.
That's right.
And so a contract was written according to the Jewish Cherokee law and signed, and that's how Chief Pam ended up with her mate today.
And I'm thrilled to hear that story.
Well, it wouldn't happen very often. There would be very few people that would have the knowledge as to even how to go about something like that.
Yeah, but isn't it refreshing to see that?
That's
what I'm saying is that you think that you're looking at ashes, and the next thing you know, there's something glowing in them.
Mm-hmm. Well, the Hopi prophesied that all the old medicine societies would be reestablished, and the Bible says that there'd be a restoration of all things according to the mouths of all the holy prophets. So this is prophesied. This was to happen.
Well, we were told in the earliest of times, the earliest word that was said to us by Yehovah in person was that there would always be priests. Period.
Even if he had to ordain them when they were 3 years old, like he did with John the Baptist.
Mm-hmm. There would always be. But not to worry about that. There will always be priests. And so here it is going on. We have it happening, and isn't that good to hear?
It is very good.
Yeah, it's a good thing. I did not hear the DNA information earlier. Do you mind repeating that, please? Before I called in. I apologize for being tardy this evening.
Well, we're sorry that we got disconnected, so we didn't hear the first 20 minutes of the program. We're very sorry about that. But
no, well, you were the first.
We were blessed with being able to start our DNA project about 13 years ago. We knew that we would find out one way or the other whether the Cherokee were of the House of Israel
or not.
We do still have the largest database of Cherokee DNA right here in the 1806 Congressional Reservation. We teamed up with Dr. Donald Panther Yates of DNA Consultants.
Right. And they're a good group, too.
Oh, yeah. And he's the one that did finally isolate and prove, it's absolutely proven, that the haplogroup on the mom's side, U5, is Cherokee Pink Clan. That one's proven. So with all of our database and his database, in time, and we're hoping in about 3 years, we're going to have all seven sacred clans of the Cherokee proven absolutely. Now, this isn't a cure-all for everybody. If this is all mtDNA on the mom's side, but it will help people isolate that ancient clan that's been lost to, 99% of all Cherokee that don't have a clue.
Oh, at least.
And the government saw to it that in all these applications for land and the rolls, they never asked them a question of what clan they were in. So a lot of this has just been lost, but it is recoverable. And we helped set up the Waccamaw, the Lumbee, the Melungeon, and another tribe's DNA project. And we done made all the mistakes. So we can, and now it's very inexpensive, and we will help any tribe set up their projects to help bring back these ancient mysteries of our bloodline. And it's going to go, all of them say the same thing. We go back to the House of Israel.
So Grandfather Richard Craker, he ran a stop dance in Kabul, Missouri about in 2001 or two. Anyway, the first thing he did is he sat down and asked everybody, well, what's your mother's name? What was her name? Far back as you can remember. And he had a book with the surnames that were associated with certain clans. And of the three or four guys that were sitting on the Wolf Clan bench with me, we had all been either involved in police or military. It's, and everybody, on my wife's Haight clan, you know, they had all been involved in medicine of some kind or healing, or even if it was just prayer warriors. It's just like we automatically seem to do whatever is our job.
Yeah, undoubtedly the clans reflect the our fabrication.
Yes, and Wayne May of Ancient American Magazine has published two major volumes on Cherokee DNA. We have those here in case we could mail you copies, Dr. Rogers. We'd be glad to.
We would love that. We would love that, Chief, sitting out. There's an undercurrent that's happening to, I feel, undermine these studies.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I ran across it. No, hang tight. Not me. I'm in your moccasins here because I agree with what you're doing. There is and I need to run it down. Mooney had a thing in which there was a prohibition, and if I only knew who he got it from, and I don't believe Mooney said, and that's one of the things I've got to do this week in some research about the taking of a person's spit. That there was a but they were referring to warriors who were out in the field, in the first place. I want to condition, not make it sound directly like it's DNA related, but out of the blue, last week I'm talking to a Native American. And he is talking about the DNA study, and he's of a different tribe, and he was delighting in the fact that the DNA was coming from the Middle East, and then the admixture of the Native American was coming from the Americas, and then the admixture of the English or whatever else was occurring. So the way he stated it was that the root of the tree was from the Middle East.
Right.
And so he was being Chief Sitting Owl and Chief Pam. I think you would say right away that he was being nebulous in describing exactly what's available in the studies, isn't he? And so he was being very light at the way he was omitting things from the phrasing. At that point, absolutely.
And there was an objection. At first we had to draw blood, and then there was a huge objection by a lot of Cherokee. Oh, you can't have our blood.
But they warned against, actually.
Yeah.
But
there was a Cherokee ceremony to where we actually spit into the fire. And I'm sorry, I get a lot of these ceremonies mixed up. Terry Miller is trying to teach this dumb person me. But which ceremony is it where we actually run up and spit into the fire? Do you remember that one?
You know,
I remember it was a form of committing. It was a form of committing yourself to the sacred flame.
You know, I would guess, this is just a guess, but I would wonder, because the Bounding Bush ceremony is done at the same time the Festival of Booth is done. And, you build the...
That sounds like it to me, too.
Build the fire, and you go in there, and you commune with your ancestors, and spitting into the fire, you know, and that
called them up. Simply called up the...
Uh-huh.
Called them up.
Like the
Orc
Delphi.
And that's a great point. Chief Sitting Owl, the thing I was hearing last week, and it disturbed me because they're missing the point, was it that this person from another... a tribe who is well aware of these studies that you guys have done, which is excellent. And whatever's true is true, and whatever's true is from Yohiwa. So that's that. There's no, Negaha. There's nothing
Absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so But when they said that, they said it like, well, then this is like then these people are to be written off. And it was like for lack of a better word, and I don't mean to insult anybody, but a government Indian talking, mm-hmm. that these people were to be written off, and of course to the ones that are not on the rolls, the ones that were free, and were not captured, that still sounds like the best trade in the world to me.
Sure.
I have no problem with being a free person, and I wish to be freer. But anyway, I think it's odd that they would already start to spin this stuff. And the reason I bring it up is that you apparently are very, very knowledgeable about that Pacific study, and it's the same study that I was looking at the time. And I wanted you, brother, to be aware that they have an attitude about this, and I think it's jealousy of some sort, its roots, and what they said was, and I know better, they said that in the 1600s a group came from the town of Cordoba, Colombia. And it was in the early 1600s, and the oppression of the Hebrew was taking place in Spain, and that these people heard that Inquisition was on its way from Spain. These people went to North Carolina, went far inland, so that they would escape any Spanish ships that would come up there from Florida, and that's how it happened. But the problem with that is, and that was where we all started this thing together. Adair will show us that when you say Yohiwa was the first name of the God of all things, with vowels put into it.
Yeah.
The first. The second was Yohiwah, and it didn't happen for 1,400 or 1,500 years. And it tapered down about 200 B.C. So when you have 600 to 800 Cherokee people out in North Carolina, and they've come in for this ceremony, and Adair's watching them, and they're singing the same song we heard, but they're singing it to Yohiwa. That name was gone in the Hebrew worship before the time of Jesus.
But the rabbis in Israel still know that name today. Rabbi Lazar Barodi is well aware.
They know the history. They know the history, and they can tell you when it was in use and why it changed and what it changed to. So the guy I was talking to, Chief Sitting Owl and Chief Pam and Blue Otter, the guy I was talking to said, as if we just got this word in the 1600s and were using, we didn't have any idea who Jesus was, but we knew who Shiloh was. We knew Shiloh.
Yeah.
We knew the morning star. All the messianic names for Christ we had in our services in 1740 and were used. And the only place that those existed, the only place that those could have come from was the Judea or Israel prior to the time of Jesus.
Sure. Now,
and that's that.
In our DNA studies, you know, especially working with the Lumbee and Melungeon, and the Spanish influx of that
mm-hmm.
particular dysphoria, it shows up, so we know what to look for. It doesn't really affect it at all. It's just we know it's there. We knew it was there, and there it's verified. But then we started getting DNA reports back showing the Moravians They were the first missionaries to the Cherokee. Their families intermarried with the Cherokee, and it's already been showing up in our DNA, that Moravian hit, to where they intermarried with us. It's very interesting. And so you can't run from this stuff. Anywhere they went, it's there, and it's quite interesting.
The Moravians, when they came to Standing Bear, I love the story, and I know you two have heard this since you were young, but if anybody else is listening that hadn't heard it, it's a wonderful story. They came in, and they asked Standing Bear, "We have a book here." And he goes, "Well, what is it?" And he said, "Well, it's a book of wonderful stories, and we'd like to stay this winter and read it to your people." And he said, "Well, you'll read it to me first. So leave somebody with me for the winter, and then you missionaries come back in spring, and I'll give you my decision." So they left, and they left a person to read it, and Sandy Bear listened to the whole Bible was read to him over the winter. So when they came back in spring, they said, "Well, what did you think of the Bible?" And he said, "Well, it's wonderful stories and very, very instructive." They said, "Wonderful, wonderful. Then we'll establish ourselves." And he says, "No, because the book is okay, but you people are liars." and so they said, "We're liars." And Standing Bear said, "Yes, you're lying." And he said, "Well, why would you say that, Standing Bear?" And the missionaries were shocked. He said, "Well, you said you've had this book for hundreds of years. Isn't that right?" He said, "Yes, we have had it for hundreds of years." And he went, "Liars." And he said, "Well, why are you calling us that?" He said, "How could you have had this book for hundreds of years and act the way you do?"
Right. Yeah. I still don't understand that today.
It's a good question, is it not, sitting
it
out?
It is good.
That's funny. Are y'all familiar? I know Blue Water is, but Chief Dr. Rogers, are you familiar with the sliver of the new moon and what happened to that when we started opening up and going into the different denominations of the churches? They couldn't take this sacred symbol that we had to use in our religion into the churches. So they put it on the outhouse. And even today, we still put that sliver of a new moon on our outhouses.
And that,
that's a joyous sign.
Yeah, we had two major routes where the Cherokee went from the east to west in our reservation. And this has been for the last, since they went out west, they would travel through here. They would look for a home that had that sliver of a new moon. They knew they were safe there because of all the Cherokee in this area, and they would stop. Well, what happened was white man liked our sliver of the new moon, started putting it on their outhouses. So that weren't that program, but what a...
That's funny.
About 3 miles from here, a man makes outhouses and sells them. The old-fashioned ones, and sure, he's got that sliver of the new moon right there.
Of the new moon.
Wow. I know in Missouri they've got some two-story outhouses, and the upper stories for the government and the lower stories for Indians.
Or deep snow.
Right. Well, and this, about the sliver of the new moon, to really understand Hebrew timekeeping, I suggest you go to danielstimeline.com. And you look around on there, you can find watch the free video. It's extremely important to understand. This was very significant in time.
Yeah, we're in 5773 right now.
Right.
Yeah. Well, did your group, the ones that went to Texas and Mexico, did they take that sliver with them, and did they put it on the outhouses?
Yes, they did.
That was one of our major questions.
Yeah, we liked it better when we had specific areas that the women would bathe, and so one half of the Texas people were from either Chickamauga or North Carolina, hill people, and then the other group was from the Western Cherokee, And so the Western Cherokee had their outhouses. You know, when you have a and everybody in this conversation will nod yes, because you guys are exactly that. When you have one foot in one world and one foot in the other world, you can't seem to get the other foot free. Who was it? John Jolly had a large home, as did Rich Jovan, and then out back they had a traditional Cherokee house. And they preferred to live in the little house, but when the Unagis came to visit to do business, they would do business in the house that looked like the Unagi house. They would have one house for the power structure of the whites to visit, in which they were drinking out of porcelain china. And then as soon as they got gone, they would get comfortable and go live in their small house out back.
Sounds like us.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it does sound like us, doesn't it? That's really the truth. You know, I long, we built a priest house here. We're seven-sided, and it's a concrete structure, but it's very soft, and we've got R-74 walls. It's virtually soundproof. When the space shuttle circled Austin at about 50-mile radius to downtown, and before it came in, it flew over us, and I happened to just be walking out the back door, and I heard it all. But inside the house, we couldn't hear a 747 carrying the space shuttle around at 1,000 feet above us.
Wow.
So we're very silent here. And the house is built to last, I'd say between 700 and 1,000 years. We have steel in it at 16-inch intervals, and it's vertical and horizontal. The fellow who built it for us, the engineer, builds safe auditoriums in Oklahoma for high schools. And so we built this priest house to be here forever. And we're not leaving Texas. And we're
That's
fighting.
Wonderful.
One of the counties here, Hays County, has ruled that we are not a religion. And so we're getting ready as soon as the time is correct, and I'm talking within the next 10 days, to take them to federal court we're going after them. I mean, we've had the plan for 6 months, and we're putting it together, getting all our research done, and anticipating everything. But the county that's doing it is Hays County, and it was named for Jack Hays, and he was the one that it was his people that slaughtered the two Cherokee towns within the Cherokee lands of East Texas. And it was Smith, under his command, that executed Diwali while he was on his knees.
Oh, my.
The old man was wounded. And
grabbed the metal tube under his arm, which had the treaties in it, and also the sword.
Yeah, and we have good news on that, Blue Otter. We've been doing a lot of research, and we research all the time. But we now have, of just people who are from that, around 200 that literally are the 200 descendants of the ones that are in the Mexican records. And so we've run across some additional new documents. And it's not about the land, brothers and sisters, it's not about the land. It's about you should not. It should be known that if you slaughter people, it should be known.
Yeah, it should be for sure.
Well, you know,
yeah,
all this,
to not
all this go going, you know, going on about Sandy Hook, the U.S. government still holds the world record for killing children in a private school. You know, it was in Texas, and it was 20 years ago, but there was 28 children that were murdered in that one.
Yeah, there was. I remember back when that happened that there was a film that came out. It wasn't a film documentary, but it was a piece of film, and it arrived on my door nailed to my door with a pin that you would stick into a bulletin board, and what is this? And so I looked at it, and it showed a tank with a flamethrower on it, sticking its barrel into the structure, setting it on fire.
But the children that were in the, there was some 30-some-odd people, including two pregnant mothers. They were in a food storage room that was 14 by 14. And the guy that went in, the investigated this, said that there was a 2-foot by 2-foot hole that was blown and into that food storage room, and the overpressure just shattered their bodies. They probably threw in thermite grenades because that's the only thing hot enough to turn bones into jelly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not, you know, saying this way or that way about the Branch Davidians, but the governor, you know, Ann Richardson said, hey, there's nothing going on there. We investigated and
there wasn't anybody. This is a true statement. There wasn't anybody looking out for the welfare of the children.
Yeah.
That you can say.
Uh-huh.
And that's all wrong. I had a friend that was shall remain nameless, but anyway, he was of the Unagi world, and he said, "Well, what do you expect us to do?" And I said, "Well, I expect you to do anything except start shooting weapons off around children."
Yeah.
I mean that's just it's not hard to figure. You may not know what to do, but you know what not to do,
not
don't
to
we?
Do. Exactly.
Yeah, there isn't a parent you know, there's just no parent that would conceive that this was a good idea. So let's say that they built a compound around it, and they got the International Red Cross to come in with doctors. And let's say that everybody was fed and the children were tended to and cared for, and let's say it takes 10 years to resolve the problem. Wouldn't that still be better?
Well, yeah. Better than doing nothing.
Yeah. Or getting everybody killed.
Exactly.
And Blue Otter? Pam, are we on here alone?
Yeah,
I guess so.
Okay.
I'm here.
All right, but anyway, the and so their need to do something is shows fear, and the strangest thing is it's fear of us, and they shouldn't be afraid of the American people. But they are, and it makes no sense.
Is our kids to be safe and us to be safe, and they just don't see it that way.
No, they don't. And so what has changed since they wrote out to take the Cherokee lands the only reason, and this is a good point to discuss among knowledgeable Cherokees and scholars like yourselves, when they came out to their main argument is that the notary fees, which only amounted to $30-$40 in gold, had not been paid on the Cherokee land. And the reason was that, and it's something worth discussing right now, particularly with the 1806 group as a warning to us all. The group was the Chickamauga wanted to hunt the entire 300,000 acres, pardon me, 300,000 hectares. It was 640,000 acres, 100 square miles was the Cherokee land grant. And the Chickamauga wanted to hunt it any and everywhere they wished. And then the Western Cherokee said, okay, we can have common grounds that are used by everybody, But we like the idea of having our own fields connected to our homes so that we can watch our cattle. We're cattle people, and we're
right.
sheep people, and so that was the problem in council, is that the Cherokees were divided for two decades on how to use the land. Now, the Chickamaugas have a point. They said that the old way was the best way, and this new way would limit us as a people. And the Western Cherokee said that production would go up, and plus some people were better farmers than others, and the better farmers would give the food left over, say a woman who owned the property. And of course, you got to remember the North Carolina Cherokee in there were going to say right away, well, the women own that plot that is connected to her house where she feeds her children, because you can't be out of sight of the children while you're tending
right.
the crops. You have to be within visual sight. And so we had these different things going on, and we did not get the land registered. We were trying to work it out. And so that was what Texas used to say that the land grant was not complete, even though the Mexicans offered in the Presidio of Bear, San Antonio, Colonel Rodriguez, which was the military commander of the district for Texas, offered to pay the notary fees if we would just please get that done. And they didn't want to tell him, well, we have differences of opinion among us. We left them out of it for fear that it might cancel something. So anyway, we've always been divided in how we look at stuff, and I guess that's our strong point, isn't it, Chief Sitting Owl, is that we can have different opinions.
Well, we can, and by coming together, he can make all of us stronger, and we learn from each other. And
yes, sir.
Over the years that we have been doing this, I've made many mistakes, and always just dreadful of some of the things that I accidentally misled people on. But then I'm obligated after that to go back and just admit, look, I was wrong. This is the way it's supposed to be instead of what
and, but see,
it's
that's
hard
actually,
to put them
that's...
words back in your mouth. And
well,
I'm
it's not
myself.
Necessary. Well, I like that confession, because that's pure chalagi. I mean, that's the old way. It doesn't really matter. Yeah, it has to be done, doesn't it?
And most people don't understand when you're in a leadership position. Gosh, it does. It stops right there. There's very little help. I've found that. People like you and Blue Water and Terry Miller, they're all in leadership positions. When these leaders get together, they can actually get some things done in a hurry, because they know what goes with it. And this way we can help more and more people on a continuing basis.
Well, people will thank you for being who you are, and I always, whenever I'm thanked for helping somebody recover their own property, I feel ridiculous because it's their property.
Well,
the government doesn't see it that way.
No, and they've got them thinking like that. Oh,
they
thank
do.
You so much for, you know, what are you talking about? This is your property. I don't have anything to do with it. It is yours.
Cherokee, we all knew that Hashem, Yahuwah, owns it all.
That's
and
it.
We're just the stewards down here, and how can anybody own property, much less have to pay tax on what belongs to God?
On our church.
Yeah.
On our church. I mean, in Hays County, and I must admit, I probably didn't give them a false impression of what they were expecting, because I wrote the entire history of the Texas Cherokees, because their county is named for the guy that was the killer of Cherokee men and women and children. And I just let them know that was so. The guy that they have the holidays for in this county was a murderer, and so I said, Ann, I'm coming before you to get our church tax exempt, and believe it or not, and this is true, they gave me the quickest kangaroo court hearing.
Oh.
We recorded it all. We have it in transcript, And they are charging me the taxes on a building, $54,000 worth of building, which doesn't exist in physical reality, as a punitive measure for coming to their court and causing them. And they said, what do you want us to do? I said, I want you to do the right thing. That's what I want you to do.
Well, we just recently went through something very similar on our church. It's our headquarters, and it was our museum. We applied for tax exemption on religious basis, took it all the way through the appeals, all the way up to the state, and as far as we could go, and their answer was no the whole time. And this is with the county tax assessor telling them face-to-face, I know what they're doing down there. They do Cherokee weddings and all these other things, testifying for us. They made sure we still had to pay taxes on that particular piece of property.
You're so right. Go ahead.
And they weren't going to let – it was a kangaroo court every time. It's unbelievable.
I knew it was coming, and I didn't help them with my attitude, unfortunately. And they became angry, and they did some things that were foolish under the law. And now we have reason to be in federal court, not state court. And they all said, no, you're not taking that to federal court. You have to go to state court first. And I said, no, I don't. It's a civil rights violation. And you people have gone way. You declared first of all that we weren't a church, and in your declaration you said we're not a religion.
Whoa!
And they don't have the right to do that.
They either
did
one.
Did they tell you weren't Cherokee also?
No, they figured out I probably was.
Good. That's a big step.
My demeanor.
I'll tell you what happened with James Mooney. James Mooney, as the guy that got peyote legalized in Utah. But what happened with him was he had a blessing written on a napkin with the commission from Grandfather Foolbull to take this to the white people, and so the DEA went to everybody that witnessed that signature and threatened that they were going to bring them up on charges and brand them as a sex criminal. That fact was leaked to us or to James. He got the goods on them. So they lay down. I mean, anytime the word Oklava comes up in federal, anybody gets arrested, all I have to do is just sit back and be nice and be patient, and the feds will spring them. We got the goods on them. We got the proof on them, and it happened because Creator gave it to us. So
that's
Creator,
right.
Creator is stepping in. And
that's right. We're seeing that blue otter, are we not?
Mm-hmm. And I also know in. With the Crees, I had a couple of friends that were working with the Joseph Bighead Band up in Canada, and their international lawyer was in international court on their behalf. And one day, her brain told her mouth to say one thing, but what came out was something else, and it won the case for her.
Wow!
So Creator's coming out of his hiding place for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were told a decade or so ago that I knew that there were things about that we needed to be like River Cain. We just needed to be seen, but not seen into. And so we basically thickened up and started studying the dynamics. When I was kidnapped in 2004 in Mexico, our tribe had supported a governor of Coahuila who was an industrialist and was not a narco. He was old school Mexican family and they believed that they were very wealthy in the mining business, in which the Cherokees also went into. I won't digress, but we had a Juan Brune receiving a political asylum, and right next to him was in the same petition was the Vans. And Mays and on. And so I said, who is Juan Brune? Because the last name is German, meaning brown, and it was John Brown III, the grandson of the captains of the Western Chiefs. They stayed in Mexico, and he took a Mexican wife. And they're one of the biggest mining families in Mexico. And these people are Western Cherokee chief families.
Hey,
I
saw ahead. A documentary some years ago about a group of Cherokees that went. They were Southern Cherokees, and they went to Brazil, I believe, and. Every year they got together and they brought out the old first Cherokee mounted flag, hung it up, and they did a stomp dance. Of course, everybody looked Latin American, and they were speaking Spanish, but they were there. They were there. 10,000 of them left after. Well, you know, Texas Cherokee went up, tried to enroll, and they were turned back by government.
Don't you
army.
Know it? And I found out how Sequoia learned about international relations in that same manner, Blue Otter.
Yeah,
is
yeah,
that, yeah, so we were in the process of supporting that governor for his candidacy for the president of Mexico because he was a straight guy, and he was part of the group that recognized us, and he knew all about the Cherokees. He emptied his archives to us.
Wow.
We're very lucky. We have all the archival information of who came and what they asked for and what they were given. They were given political asylum. We were given land. We have land in Mexico. We have the land where Sequoia's tomb is at, and we and so at that point I said, well, there's something. I just feel like something's tracking us, you know, and the phone's starting to sound funny and blah blah blah. And the next thing you know, I'm three guys are trying to take my head off with guns and such like that, and they're being very with a lot of prejudice. So I figured I was not going to make it out of there, and I was taken to a house where kidnapped people are kept, and my wife and I had saved up funds for a rainy day just like that, and we had always done that. And so anyway, it was by an act of God that I escaped. After we paid the deal, they were going to probably take me and do away with me. And I refused to get in the trunk. I just said, well, shoot me out here, and somebody will hear the shot up and down these neighborhoods, and the story will at least go back. And then they, oh, no, no, no. And so they took me to a cab, and I was in the cab, and the driver had two phones. I said, let me borrow your phones. Local call. He said they don't work, and then the next thing you know, the phone rings, and he gives our location. I thought, well, it's his company checking in with him, and then we pass another street, and he picks the phone up without calling anybody, and he gives our new location. And I said, well, that's odd. So the third time he does it, I said, well, somebody's trying to rendezvous with us. And so at that point, I just stepped out of the car at about 35 miles an hour in downtown Matamoros, and I'm not that agile. I'm 65 years of age. Then I was a lot younger, though. I think I was 60. So anyway, I rolled out of the car, got up, took off running. And I'm not Catholic, but a Catholic priest comes out of his church, and he climbs up on a planter box in front of his church, and he's holding his cell phone up trying to get signal. And like, it looked like the Statue of Liberty to me. So I ran up to him. I ran up to him and scared him half out of his wits, covered in blood, shirts all torn up, clothes disheveled. He goes, what happened to you? He says in Spanish, what happened to you? I said, call this number quick. I did. and my driver came and the people from my clinic, and they surrounded me, and the priest did, and then here came the goons to fetch me back, and the townspeople of Matamoros gathered up in the park and started shouting, "What's going on there? Leave the padre alone. Leave those people alone." And so that's when I knew that that I'd been saved. And so I took off, and after I gave it some thought, I said, okay, the last guy to say go to Mexico and live free was Sequoia, and they kidnapped him. And then I was the second one to do that in Mexico, and I get kidnapped.
Well, Chief
lying to you.
Chief Joe owns a couple hundred acres in Cherokee Camp, and there was tell him about what happened out there with shots fired, Chief, and some of the political stuff that went on in your county.
Oh, great. We nearly had a Waco right here. In fact, I was barricaded inside our church and our headquarters. Even had to put signs on the door that I was taking religious political asylum in that building. They were going to come in after me, and I was armed. We had several different groups that wanted to come in with guns to try and help us, but we asked them, no, don't come in because we didn't want something to happen. We have been persecuted beyond belief, but all this persecution has been funded by the task force out in Oklahoma. The Eastern Band of Cherokee has been involved in it, and they had to shut us up. No matter what it took, they charged me that one of the gals said I sexually assaulted her, which I'd been celibate for 15 years or more, and all I give is a holy kiss, as we're instructed in the Holy Scriptures to all of our ladies, but I didn't do it. I even got convicted of it, but I won it on appeal. But this is... happened to other tribes that were on the verge of the possibility of getting acknowledgement from the BIA.
That's right.
A chief down in, they sent their people up to talk to us down in Mississippi. He's still in prison. They said he assaulted a child, and he's still in prison. So they will do anything. And everything to make sure that we are never acknowledged by the government. And they don't care how much money
they
spend.
I agree with you, and I think it's even broader than that. Where
we
bring people together.
Shots fired at our Cherokee camp, the Free Boy Scout camp.
Good Lord.
And it's the Ku Klux Klan's been involved up here after us. They rode all over the buildings. We had all the evidence for the FBI to come in and help us, and they wouldn't even come in and talk to us. It was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen in my life, and I'm surprised somebody didn't get killed. God killed three of them already, but he knows how to, you know, get some things out of the way.
And you might add, you've got the Washington Peace Medal that was given to the Cherokee, and when they came after you for tobacco, didn't you say that the BATF just came in and looked at the medal and looked at the provenance from Library of Congress and walked out?
Oh, yeah, they did, but the state come in, and we're still in that battle. We still don't have the ruling on it, even though we've had the final hearing. But they've come at us from every angle and every side to destroy us. It has been a very, very bad experience. But money that they have, they made it clear in Nashville at several meetings up there on state recognition that they'd spend their entire budget to make sure it never happened.
Saying that that they had spent. Did you catch him on video saying that they had spent almost $1 million?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. They spread it around up in Nashville with the politicians. They don't care. They don't even try and hide it. They pay off each committee to vote no and kill it. We've been working on that for over 10 years,
uh-huh.
And of course we failed every time. We had, about 3 years ago, we had the History Channel come down to, part of their programming was about the Cherokee DNA and the Israel connection. We went through all that. Everybody had the same material and the same data, but we found out that a large prominent family of the Eastern Band of Cherokee bought the program. So the report was, and Greenspan of a DNA company would not give the truth of the DNA results. So instead of reporting 33 1/3% on the Y-12, the male side DNA being of the House of Israel, they said only 3%, and wouldn't even talk about the mtDNA, which we were running over 90% hitting the ancient Israelite blood on the mom side of the family. But they wouldn't even report that. So it was sabotaged from the get-go. And I don't really want to say the name of that family. Nevertheless, money talks, and you can buy anything.
That's right.
Now, supposedly, there's a new series coming on, and they're supposed to be coming down here, a different group, to interview Chief Pam on some of these matters to try to get some of this stuff corrected. Scott Walter, he's a old forensic rock pathologist or whatever they do, but he can date rock by examining it. He's the one that came in to authenticate our Jubilee Stone and some other very important artifacts. He's had a new program on recently that's part of this new attempt to try to get the truth out about the ancient American Indians. So we're hoping that we'll get another shot in getting the truth out. But what got us the worst of all of it. We never heard of a lying Indian. It's always honest Indian. And it used to be the death penalty. But we get up to Nashville and we see these Eastern and Western Band Cherokee up there lying through their teeth. And they had to learn that evil from the white man. God didn't teach it to them. But the old devil's the father of lies, and that's who they follow. It's a shame that these governments that's running some of these acknowledged tribes, that they haven't realized that they need, these men need to step down and get these righteous grandmothers up there and let them run the show the way it used to be. And they would pull the people together because our ladies know how to do things like
that. 10 years ago in Canada, the women started turning their corrupt chiefs into the government for corruption.
Okay.
Well, the Hebrews currently use the mothers as the verification of the child being Hebrew, and that's just matrilineal, and that exists among Jewish people to this day.
Yeah.
It's the mother's lineage that establishes the whether or not they're the chosen people, and so we find it all the time. And we had a fabulous matrilineal society with such brain power and such sharp, intelligent people, and it had a synergy to it that does not exist in almost any culture today. And now, Chief, in your group, where we have the migration legend of coming from the east to the west and crossing the ocean and coming to an island where we fought the Olmecs, we believe we have found that island. I've been down to it. I have talked to the people and counseled with the Kalinago. They're the largest Caribbean-based Indian tribe, and they told of their ancient legends. It took a while to do it. We had to do quite a few friendship ceremonies before they would talk to us as human beings and not as if we were tourists. and or government people or what have you. But we did some things to prove who we were, and so that was once we got started, they said that the people that came before them were very cruel people, and that they were very war loving, and they had fought with some people who were living there peaceably, but they were people that were did not look like the ones that were from here. And so I think we found that island, and so I'm licensed to practice medicine in that island, and we're working on a clinic for the Kalinagos to help them out. They have a very poor standard of living because they live next to rainforest, but they know not how to gather anything in the rainforest.
Well, our DNA would be right there in them. Because they would be
in exchange. We had left for the mainland, and when we went to the mainland, and that's where the mixing took place. There's actually a Panamanian state called Cherokee, and the Cherokee is Spanish for Cherokee. And we have a volcano and a river and a bay, all Cherokee.
There's a Cherokee K in the Bahamas where some of our people that got caught up in the slave trade.
Don't you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and lots of them got taken to Havana and then put around on the islands. But in Panama, there's where the two oceans come together. There's actually a state called Cherokee. And in it is a place called the Mountains of the Valley of the Moon, and that's what the word Cherokee means in the Guaymi Indian language, which is the Indians next door. But the Indians next door were a huge group of people that ran from the middle of Mexico to Bolivia and lived on the Pacific Ocean. They were the Oceanside Indians. So here are the Native Americans that used our name to describe the valley of the Mountains of the Moon. And in this Guaymi tribe, there was a dictionary published in the 1930s in the Smithsonian, giving all of their words, and I read every word of it slowly and looked toward Cherokee roots, and their word for church is Ketua.
Oh wow! Well, there's a mountain in Central or South America called Wasi. Cherokee Moses.
Wasi, that's right. There's a town on the edge of Judea, Wasi, and so Wasi, and yet there's a mountain in South Carolina, and I'm trying to remember the name of it. I have it written here, but it reads the same in Cherokee, and it reads the very same. It came in Chenoweth's website. He had this word for he is in the middle of the mount.
Okay, and you got Chunky Girl Mountain in North Carolina. There was a girl in history that could outplay the Chunky Game, Cherokee Chunky Game, and they named the mountain or call it Chunky Girl. It's still there today.
Well, the one that is in the middle of the mountain. In Hebrew, reads, God is in the middle of the mountain.
Okay.
And I mean, it's the same word. I mean, it's a long word, it's a phrase, but it is the same word in both languages. And the thing I wanted to ask you about, Chief, and you, Chief Pam, is that we had a person come to us and say, okay, we're from Mexico and we're supposed to be Cherokee, and they listed their whole family story, and in it we had a guy that had come out of somewhere out of y'all's area and had come to Nacogdoches, and he listed himself as being a Cherokee chief and was permitted to go out to the Cherokee land and settle. Which you had to have the council's permission, Diwali and Bowles and the Dragon Canoe and the others to go out and live with them. And so, but his name, his first name was Bull, B-U-L, and his last name was Cham, C-H-A-M. Well, Cham, of course, is Hebrew for the children of Ham, and bull in Hebrew is strong or hot, meaning of a strong son of Cham, of Ham. And Bull Cham was in the fight, and he went to Mexico after they put a price on all of their heads, and he made it to Mexico, and he asked for asylum, and we have that paper with Bull Cham on it, and he has a completely Hebrew name, first and last. Wally and Bowles approved him as being a Cherokee chief, a Western chief, and we can't find where he came from. So I wanted to just bring that name up in case y'all run across those names.
By the way,
we
have Mark Borcherding, who is an expert on Mayan calendar, and he might be able to help you too. And we wanted to, if there's a little time left, we can go past 2 hours, and I'd like him to do a Mayan birthday kind of a reading for you guys. Because anyway, go ahead and continue. Didn't mean to interrupt.
All right.
No, well, all your interruptions are. I always learn something.
Well, Mark, if you want to, why don't you go ahead and do that? That's probably a good time. We were talking earlier about how people that are involved in the restitution or restoration of Cherokee Nation and others, and the Hopi Prophecy and others, we seem to be doing what we're doing, even though there's been no connection or, you know, we weren't brought up in that. But maybe... if you do a Mayan birthday reading first on Dr. Rogers and give people an idea, you know,
okay,
how this comes into play. What's your full birthday, Dr. Rogers?
10/11/47, unfortunately.
Okay.
October 11th, 1947?
Yes, sir. And okay. Mark, Design Velocity, it's very nice to welcome to our presence, and thank you for being on this show.
Wow. I appreciate being here.
Yeah, Mark.
Thanks to Blue Otter.
he's been my sidekick.
Yeah.
You know, for several years, Mark's kind of a wunderkind, you know, whiz kid, and I didn't understand where he was coming from for a few years, but you know, he's been my constant companion on this show, and it's just absolutely fascinating to get guests on, and all of a sudden you give them their Mayan birthday reading, and they're going, oh my gosh. And
well, I do love the Mayans too. I know many, many of them. I know their oldest timekeeper, and I have his book somewhere around here. But I was just looking for it. But he used to stay with us when he would go up and talk at Texas A&I and things like that through an interpreter to Spanish to English then. And I'm trying to find his book. But go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry.
Well, while he's looking that up, my friend Robert Three Eagles, fathers of the Ketua bloodline, and he ran into a man who published the only book on Mayan astrology in Spanish years ago. And the way they do their vision quest ceremonies, they do it on their Mayan birth date during the center of night. And they also do it at place that is divined to be a quintessence, was the word that was used. But this man was run out of Mexico and lives up in Cedar City, Utah, and makes his living as doing pottery. But, go ahead, Martin. You probably got that.
I have a question for Chief. Does he know if he was born... before or after sundown?
After sundown.
That's what I thought. I was looking at it, and I had a feeling it was I needed to adjust it for that. Okay. So I was right. Always trust your feelings. Okay. the reason for that is that, okay, so in the traditional Mayan, that was October 11th, 1947, after sundown, right?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. So in the, using the traditional Mayan day count, that day would have been a day called 8 Lamat. And that that number, it's composed of the number 8 and then the Lamat. And the Lamat, the number 8, tells about completion of things, especially things that are energies and things that have to do with the physical material world. It's a lot about...
We agree with that already. 8 is a big number. It was the number that Cherokees traveled in if there was trouble expected. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, it's happening to you, right? So mm-hmm. It also relates to the top of a pyramid. It also carries a more male energy. So it would be completion of things in the material world was kind of the male part of the energy thing to it. So it would be in the energy light fields, it would be more of the right clockwise rotation of the energy fields.
Mm-hmm.
And at the top of the pyramid, they've actually measured this, and there's a frequency coming out of that, and the frequency is of the color green.
Oh,
and it's very helpful, and it ties in, probably they believe it even ties within the green of the chlorophyll in the plants.
Oh,
and
yeah, I'm a fanatic for green plants and foods, and I can't have enough green things. I live in the Texas Hill Country where we have the trees are not cedar like you guys are used to. The locals call them cedar. They got that wrong too.
Juniper.
It's a juniper.
Yeah, like in Utah.
But 365 days a year, I have greenness surrounding my house all the way over the hills. Go ahead.
So now the green in the Mayan in the medicine wheel would be in the center. So if you look down from the sky, looked onto a pyramid, and you saw the four corners of the pyramid, like the four directions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the capstone or the top of the pyramid would be in the center of the medicine wheel, and it's green, and there is literally a green light coming out of the top of that pyramid, and it's also determined that green frequency is very, extremely healthy.
So and let me add that Rabbi Michael Bar-Ron told me that at the moment of creation, Creator shined a green light, a green beam of light out into the universe, and that was at the moment that he spoke creation.
Yeah. The Mayans, actually, if you look in their Popol Vuh creation, it talks about this change of the world cycles from one sun or one world age to the next. In there, they have a couple of prayers, and these are prayers that are being said, or songs or prayers that are being said while they're in the darkness between the ages, this change of the cycles. Mm-hmm. And those prayers only mention one path. Doesn't talk about the red, the white, the black, or the yellow
mm-hmm.
path. It only mentions the green path.
Mm-hmm.
And so, okay, so that's that part. The other part of your thing was the Lamat. It's also called the star glyph. It relates to seeds and plants as well and growing in abundance. It also is relates to sometimes to the planet Venus and or the dawn star, which we hear a lot. What was the name you used earlier? Shiloh.
Mm-hmm. Shiloh.
Yeah.
Or Shilu, actually, but go ahead.
Okay. So that one is also associated sometimes with the stars of the Pleiades.
Mm-hmm.
Or not Pleiades, I'm sorry, Arcturus.
Mm-hmm.
Arcturus and Pleiades have some relationship to each other, but now the glyph, what Blue Otter just said, this glyph mm-hmm. also relates back, and it's like the seed or germ of life and creation. It relates back to the creation of the universe. What are you saying about the green light and all that? So it's tied exactly back to that, too. Now, so that's that one. I'm also going to do one for you. The next part of this reading I'm going to do for you is going to be from the standpoint of the next cycle. So this is looking at from the standpoint we're currently like in the fifth sun, or, well, some people believe we're already in the sixth sun, but I think from the long count perspective we might be, but we haven't gone through the time of darkness yet, or the period between world ages. So we're still shifting, I think. We're not quite in there yet. This reading, the part I'm going to do next, is for from that point of view. It's a Zulkan for the next cycle. And it has three, I'm going to go over three components, kind of a forward flow of time, which is from your birth forwards, and a backward flow of time, which is more the direction coming backward from the next world cycle back into sixth sun, back into your birth, right? And then the third component is going to be where these two come together and unify and create kind of a zero point. Okay, so the first part is going to be the forward flow of time. And this is going to move like in a counterclockwise time flow spiral. So its reading is saying about your birth. It's saying, this is where I was getting the Pleiades, getting ahead of myself. It's saying things about yourself, about things of focusing, expanding awareness, things that probably since you're born, things that you're interested in doing, things like that, things that had to do with using that for flourishing and prosperity and stuff, not just for yourself at all, for all. And it it has a thing about radial light here. So things that, this goes back to that pyramid thing with the green coming out of the top, right? And that spiral of energy. The Hopi talk about two warrior twins, right, sitting at the poles. And one of them's going to be moving clockwise, and the other one's going to be going counterclockwise. And they are hooked in literally to the light energy torsion fields of creation from Creator. And as they move through each other and balance each other and counterbalance each other, it forms basically our reality. So this thing I'm reading in your birth says that you're probably sort of interested in stuff like that and maybe already know quite a bit about it or have maybe learned.
Well, I'm tracking the stories of the two brothers are all over the five civilized tribes. And needless to say, the Mayans and the Hopis have their stories too. And the Hopis, it's fascinating the way you described them, because the two brothers were opposites. One was going one direction. One of them loved the Native American, and he understood the color of the Native American and the reason for the color. And it goes back as far as the first people were red, and their children were of the right color, because after we left the state of grace, we were basically red people on Earth, and there were things that would kill us and things that could harm us, and we divided up and we had enemies. And as the populations grew, the children determined the color of the adults, not the adults determined the color of the children. If the children were the wrong color for their habitat, then they could be found and destroyed. So the first color was red, and after a while, when there was different colors for different habitats, the people of the sand would their children would be safe in a sand color. The people of the darkest jungles, black is the only color that's safe in a jungle. All shadows are black. If you've ever been in a rainforest, there are shadows there that you cannot see through. I've never seen anything so dark in my life. Then if you go to the area where the snows, the ice have come, the children need to be a light color, not to be seen by enemies or predators. And so one of the brothers knew this, because when he hunted when he landed on the mainland, and the tribe that was there, and he and his people and their people became what is described by Sitting Owl in such a wonderful way, with the actual DNA name for the clan. When it was formed, he knew that those children of those people were the right color, and that was an act of God, the deity. And the other brother did not. And we still are faced with that, are we not, folks, in this day and time?
Definitely.
And everybody, if you'd like to check and see, 80% of people that have a Native American blood have something called a Mongolian spot. And it's usually on your trunk somewhere. Mine is.
My mother had it right above on her forehead.
Really?
Exactly. About an inch above the bridge of her nose, and I know it. And people, we couldn't eat in an Indian restaurant.
It's blue. Because
they would all come over and want to touch it.
mine's below my left kidney, but it's you can look that up. It's on Wiki, Mongolian spot.
Oh, yeah.
Panda
God.
I got a spot somewhere like that down around that area. I don't think it's that color.
Mother's was a red, and it was like a diamond-shaped looking thing.
Huh.
And of course, grandfather was so red that when you go to our website, you'll see this gentleman wearing a 1904 Army hat, campaign hat,
uh-huh.
and he was an Army cook, and he did two hitches in Oklahoma where they kept Geronimo, and Joseph would make the food for Geronimo because he was scared that they were trying to poison him, and so he and my father were grandfather were pals. But go ahead with the rest.
Okay.
Of it. Yeah, the two brothers, you are so correct.
So they're
all
two,
over my thinking.
Yeah, well, the thing that's going to be important for you, what I'm seeing in your reading here, is they're connecting into what we saw earlier with your Lamont star glyph thing. They're working with that. And they're working in things where you, if you're using